Hey, gang, this is Masad Ayoub. I'm here to tell you to take yourself and ideally your kids and your grandkids to an Appleseed Project shooting event. It's about history, it's about pride in your country, and not incidentally, it's about marksmanship and having a whole lot of fun. I hope to see you there.
Well, I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns. Well, I really like 22 Mag, 45 lever with the Winchester tag. I like my double barrel, had it most of my life. 357 was a present from my wife. I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada. Our goal is to inform, update, and entertain the new shooter about the many fun and exciting aspects of sport shooting in Canada. Please remember that the show's content is simply the opinions of the hosts and our guests. And remember what they say about opinions. Everybody has one. So without delay, let me introduce our hosts, George Hatch and Tom Donnelly.
I like guns. I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale. Hell, I want them all.
Hello and welcome to episode 19 of the New Shooter Canada podcast. How are you doing this week, Tom?
Oh, doing good. I have to get to turn on my microphone. How you doing, Dirk?
Microphone on does help.
Well, I had to cough. I didn't want to cough on the microphone, so I muted it, and then you introed me, so it sort of screwed me up. I'm doing good. How you keeping?
I am doing well, doing well. So, what have you done in guns this week?
Oh, it's been a lot. As we said last week, the Excalibur finally arrived. I'm happy with it. The gun is very tight. Slide to frame fit is bank vault tight with zero play. But they still slide together like ball bearings. There's no barrel movement at the muzzle or in the battery. After taking the business rep for Grand Power suggested that I store the gun cocked and then dry fire a few hundred times, and it worked. When I first got it, the double action pull was over almost 12 pounds. And the single action pull was 4.5. And then after doing that, it dropped the double action down to 5.5 and the single action to 2.5. So I'm very impressed with the single action on the gun. And as Terry described it before, it's like butter. The trigger broke really, really nice. Pretty close to a 1911, just a little slight roll like a CZ, if you're familiar with that type of trigger. So I finally got it up to the range today. So I'll just give you my overall review of the gun, what I thought. So let's start with the grip. With the three supplied plastic grips, it was easy to fit the gun in anybody's hand. So it's like the Generation 4 Glock. You can interchange the grips. But the largest grip allowed me to fit my hand the best. But I have really long, skinny fingers, so I found that engaging the extended mag release is really difficult with the extended grip. So I went back and I had to settle for the smaller grip. Also, the grip is very slippery and needs a little more tactile feel to it, especially the front straps. It has horizontal grooves across, so your fingers fit across the horizontal grooves and they tend to slide. So if they had vertical serrations, it would allow for a much better gripping service. But I put a lot of skateboard tape on it, and that solved the problem. The frame also has a light rail in the front, for those of you who want a light rail. After running it to range, I absolutely loved the trigger on the gun. As I said, it was 7.5 pounds double action, 2.5 single action, and the trigger reset was very short and fast. And the serrations on the trigger face are very comfortable. So I can't say enough about the trigger of the gun. At first, I was not happy about the groupings I was getting. But that quickly changed after a few magazines. The barrel finished its break-in period. And by my fourth magazine, all my shots were in the black and well-grouped, considering the limited ammo that I was shooting. Because initially, I wanted to test 4 or 5 different brands of ammo. So I bought 4 boxes to the range. Got all set outside, got all set up, ready to go. And with the wind chill, it was about minus 20. So I said, no way. I went back inside. I said, screw that. And I just shot. I bought about three boxes of my own reloads. I believe they were 125 grain, round nose, plated. I'm trying to remember what I loaded them to. I think 3.9 grains of Winchester 231. So with the right cartridges, this gun will probably shoot even better than what I shot, because I only had the one type of loan to test it with. Now, the extended ambi safeties, they work well, but they're really big. Like, they're double the thickness of the extended safeties on my 1911. So they're a little, like, to disengage it was no problem. To engage it was a little encumbersome for me. But they are plastic, so I may trim off a little material on the right side to make it easier. However, did get in the way of engaging the slide stop, because the slide stop on that gun is ambidextrous, and it's just a serrated flat piece of metal that fits flush against the frame. So it's not allowing you much of a handhold release. So if you've got your hands, you really have to reach around the safety to disengage the slide stop. You could do it with your other hand, but from your grip position, I found it difficult because the thumb safety was in the way. But it's not a big deal. It's something that you can it's just a matter of learning it and working around it. The right-handed extended ambi safety works well. Sorry, not the safety, the mag release. The right side is extended. The left side is just regular, but it's not checkered. It's rather a receding circular impressions. It works well, but it's not like a regular mag release where you push it and just goes straight in. This thing rotates when you put it in. So when you press the button, the whole thing sort of turns. Again, it's not a problem. It's just a different feel to it, because I'm so used to the checkered extended mag releases I have on my 1911s. Now, my biggest complaint would be the rear sight. The sight picture is very narrow. There's not much room for light bars on either side of it, but it's still workable with the bright fiber optics sight. Both the front and rear sight are serrated to reduce glare, but the rear sight was a little bit of a disappointment. I guess I wasn't crazy about the feel of it. The rear sight adjustment increments were very large and not precise, where I'm used to the real micro adjustments that I can get. There were subtle clicks to be felt on the elevation adjustments, but I could barely feel anything resembling a locking on the windage adjustment. After speaking to David from Grand Power, who's the international business rep, he actually took a picture of the site and told me there are ball bearing detents in there. It just didn't feel the same that I'm used to on the with the locking detents on my 1911s. I prefer the audible precision micro adjustments on my sights. These tend to be a little bit wider, but that said, I was still able to keep the gun precisely on target, and the sights didn't move. And we have some pictures of the windage adjustment. David sent me some pictures that we'll put up. Also, with the slide itself has 26 lightning cuts on the slide, so it's very light, easy to rack, with lots of surface area to grab front and back, and the gun cycled really quickly. I mean, when you fire it, it's ejects it in the battery super, super fast, and it was really smooth. All the shells ejected over my right shoulder and landed 3 feet behind me. I think I fired three boxes altogether, so 150 rounds. I had zero failures to feed, fire, or eject. So I definitely recommend this gun to be a good value for the money, and we'd give it two thumbs up. What you doing guns this week, George?
I did. Didn't really do a whole lot of shooting. But I was out, took my girls out to archery. Anyone that follows me on Facebook, 2 weeks ago I signed the girls up for archery and apparently inadvertently signed myself up as well, which was pretty cool.
That counts, right, Trevor?
Yeah. So I didn't have my 2 weeks ago, I didn't have my bow with me because I wasn't expecting to show up. But this week I came prepared, and I haven't pulled. I didn't go hunting this past fall, so it's been, I'm going to say, almost a year since I've actually drawn my bow and rediscovered a bunch of muscles going across my shoulders. But I was actually quite impressed. I'm usually a fairly modest guy when it comes to my shooting ability, but I was dropping the arrows they're pretty much dropping one right on top of the other. That the instructor had switched me from just like a single target to a tri-target. So on like one piece of paper, you got three different targets. So one arrow in each target, so you don't smash your your arrows. So I was actually kind of impressed with that. I had not expected it to go that well. And of course, as soon as I switched over to the tri-target, I was like 3 inches, 4 inches off to the right. So I was like, yeah, of course.
Using a compound or a recurve bow?
Compound. I use the bow that I take out hunting with me. And so that was my archery. And of course, my girls are recurve girls. And they have no interest in compounds at all. And other than that, I start clearing off my reloading bench. And so I need to get some ammo so I can get all gangster with my cowboy pistols. And that's about it. I haven't really done a whole lot. So I've done more in archery than I've done in guns. But I did find a new podcast. I was listening to the Squirrel Report, which is not the Armed Squirrels, a different squirrel podcast.
There's more than one squirrel?
Apparently. And so they were talking guns. It's funny, the last two episodes, they're just a general conversation, you know, whatever the topic, you know, whatever's kind of hot in the news, they just kind of just chat about it. But they're all kind of gun bloggers that have turned to podcasting. And so the last two episodes were almost exclusively talking about guns. And last episode, this one guy calls up, and right out of the box, we need to normalize the gun culture in America. I'm like, amen, brother. Preach it. So one of the hosts or co-hosts or one of the guys on the show was talking about this other podcast that he's on, and it's called the Gun Blog Variety Cast. And what it basically is just they do like 10-minute segments of different people that have gun blogs. And whatever their blogs are about, they'll do like a 10-minute segment. And there's one guy on there that probably most of the people that run in the pro-gun podcast circles on Facebook have probably seen him post up. McGill, I can't remember his last name off the top of my head. But I've seen him all over Facebook before. He runs a blog. So that's kind of... that's what I found. I just listened to their latest episode, actually the latest two episodes, and it's pretty good. I enjoyed it. I'm going to stay subscribed to it. So
I had a chance to listen to that Firearms Cafe you were telling about. It was pretty good, and they actually had Daniel Shaw on the last episode.
Yes.
Show. And we even got a mention at the end of the show, which was kind of cool. I'm grabbing a hold and go, listen to it. And he's a well-known podcaster. He's got like 2,000 likes on Facebook, and getting towards the end of the show, and he mentions our show. I'm like, yay, we got mentioned on the Big American Show.
Well, whenever I email into podcasts, I always like drop New Shooter Canada. So, and I emailed his Armed Ape podcast, and I was like, oh, you know, hey, I do my own show, New Shooter Canada. If you're ever interested, you know, check it out. And then on Firearms Cafe, he had mentioned that he had started listening to it. And that was 2-3 shows ago.
Excellent.
And I was like, sweet.
Well, I really enjoyed him on the Armed Squirrels Project. They had him on a couple episodes ago.
Yeah. I've been listening to Tony. Well, I took that kind of 1-year hiatus from podcasts. And then before that, like the year before that, I started this in 2013, November 2013, I think it was. And I had been listening to podcasts for almost a year before that, so I've been listening to him for quite a while.
Excellent. Well, I enjoyed it. He's going to be on my regular to listen to list.
Yeah, he's one of the few guys that can do a solo cast and really keep you engaged. He does a really good job. So that is it for...
So what's new in guns, or what are the guns in the news this week? Are you going to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I will let you go first. I just lost my spot on the show notes.
Well, I guess
Toby and Sticks wouldn't know anything about.
What's that? Show notes. We should post a copy of the show notes.
I'm scrolling through what you did in guns, and it just never seemed to end. There we go. Story 1, SHOT Show. All right, well, why don't you take the SHOT Show?
Well, as everybody knows, everybody that we all know is at SHOT Show, Pat and Chris and Paul from the Polite Society. So SHOT Show, lots of goodies coming from our friends at the SHOT Show. Pat Harrison and Chris Rakowski from Action Shooting Radio attended this year's show and posted some videos and pictures that you might enjoy. So please check out their Facebook page and their website to see what the boys are up to. And the Polite Society podcast also has some excellent show coverage happening. They were asking listeners what products they wanted to see and hear about on the show. They put a question up on Facebook. So Paul and John scouted the showroom floor to find the products and answers and answered the questions posted on the Facebook page, while Susan, who was not feeling well, streamlined and coordinated the efforts from with the SHOT Show map and her cell phone up in the hotel room. So we know who really runs the show, right, Susan? But they did a great job. I think Trevor put in questions and Brian put in questions. And she had the map. She said, okay, well, you got to go over to this area here and this area here. And they took the questions. And she said, okay, now next question, you got to go over here. So it was really a well-coordinated effort. And it was a show. They did, I think, 7 shows this week, all mini shows from the SHOT Show. And I listened to most of them. And they really covered a lot of areas. So if you want to listen to some good SHOT Show coverage, tune in to the Polite Society podcast. They have a whole week full of SHOT Show stuff. And what's story 2, George?
Did you get into some sugar before the show?
I had coffee. I'm not going to sleep tonight. I was getting sleepy out in the garage. For real, I'll have a coffee and a cigarette. And I shouldn't. I get to go to bed in a couple hours.
So everyone that's listening, when I'm talking, put it on normal speed. When Tom's talking, put it at half speed.
Okay, I'll try to slow down.
Okay. Story 2 is a kind of a comical one. Two men dressed in camouflage with what turned out to be fake guns were arrested outside an anime convention in downtown Gatineau Friday afternoon, but police now believe neither had criminal intentions. Gatineau police approached the arrest at high risk due to reports that men were armed. Now, I'm going to stop here for a sec. Anime, for anyone that doesn't know, is Japanese animation. So it's kind of like a Comic-Con. So people are going to be dressed up as their favorite characters or whatever, right? It's one of those geeky things. So naturally, there's going to be costumes that have guns and firearms and all sorts of wacky, weird things. So just to kind of give some context to the story. So moving on. The men, found to be in possession of an air gun and a plastic gun, did not resist arrest. Well, I got a cough.
So I have to talk while you're coughing. I guess I'll cough. I'll talk while you cough.
Did not resist arrest. These two gentlemen were probably loading their pants because they're like, they probably out of their base, my parents' basement for the first time in, you know, in the year. Get all geeky out at the anime convention. Anyways, Gatineau police spokesperson Pierre something or other warned convention goers to be careful when choosing a costume. If you want to attend an event like that, don't walk on the street dressed like that, Pierre said. I'm not going to try his last name. Even if it's fake arms, you might be stopped by a police officer and questioned by a police officer. Police received reports that two suspicious-looking men, one wearing a mask, wow, go figure, at an anime convention, could be armed outside the something.
Palais de Congrès conference
center around 1 p.m. The building on Promenade de Portage is hosting G-Anime, a 3-day anime and manga convention. The canine unit assisted with the arrest. Police released the men after giving them a $270 fine. I don't know what the fines could have possibly been for.
Is there fines for stupidity?
Well, they weren't doing anything stupid. It was the cops that were being idiots.
Oh, they should at least worn their jackets off before they went inside. But then everybody's in costume. Some idiot probably just saw the guns and the auntie freaked out and called them a gun call. And I bet you the SWAT team showed up too.
Yeah, well, probably, because they have, where is it here? They had it, what did it say? High risk. Gatineau police approached the arrest as high risk due to reports that the men were armed.
Yeah, so we probably had the tactical team take down the poor guys. They probably did dump a load in their pants, like you said.
Probably. So, unfortunately, they didn't. The report didn't say what the fines were for. So I'd be very curious as to see what the fines were. Causing a disturbance because, you know, dressed up at an anime convention. Anyways. So, that's the news for this week. That's, keep it on the lighter side, although it's kind of depressing that that happened to these young fellows. So this week's main topic is going to be rifle combo deals and scopes. And this is Tom's baby, so I am going to kick it over to him. And
we're trying to keep the topic on, like, we've had a few guests lately, and we really try to keep the show focused on the new shooter. And, you know, we were talking about the SKSs and different types of guns that could appeal to new shooters, used guns, an example. Well, the big thing nowadays is the Savage Axis package deals. And I went out last year and I bought a Savage Axis. And the gun's a real track driver. It's super accurate. After finding what ammo it liked to eat, I made the mistake when I bought it. I bought some of the Hornady white-tailed ammo. And it shot like crap. I was getting 3-4 inch groups with it with a white-tailed ammo, and I was really, really disappointed because I knew Matthew had gotten some exceptional accuracy with his. And then I went out a second time and I bought some of the Winchester Super X, and I also had a couple boxes still left over from when I owned a 270 before. And after benching it, the stupid thing shoots under an inch at 100 yards now. So I was getting 1/2 inch, 3/4 inch groups with it. So for a first-time shooter, we're looking for something on a budget. You know, the Savage Axis and the package deal, it's a good deal, and it's within everybody's price range. Now, just my thoughts on the scopes that come in these package deals from Savage. First thing you should do is loosen the scope rings, remove the scope, and just throw it in the garbage. And while you're at it, you might as well throw the cheap rings out too. My advice to anybody is to buy the best glass you can afford from a quality manufacturer and some good rings. It's a great rifle, but the optics are the bottom of the barrel, off-brand from Bushnell. These days, if you want decent optics at a fair price, Nikon, Weber, Burris, etc. all make quality optics, $200 to $250 rings that should fit most shooters' needs in the range or in the field. And I would strongly suggest that everybody stay away from buying anything from NC Star or Leaper. They are absolute garbage. There's no use in going out and spending 50, 60 bucks and have a break in a couple months and go out and have to spend another 50, 60 bucks. You know, at least go out and spend $200 to $300 and get something that's, you only have to pay the money once and it'll last you the rest of your life. That said, a lot of us buy the package deals because we can't afford a new scope. You know, it's, I think I paid under, I think this rifle and the scope were $375 out the door. I think with taxes it came to $400. This one does not have an AccuTrigger. It just has a standard trigger. And when I took it home and measured the trigger pull, it was almost 8 pounds. It was pretty heavy. Matthew from Slamfire Radio has a video channel. I think it's called M Matt on YouTube. And he posted a little video, which is quite comical, on how to reduce the trigger pull. The comical part is his trigger scale, but you'll have to go see the video. Basically, you're just replacing the spring in the trigger return system. And after, you know, watching Matt's video and taking a suggestion, I got the trigger pull down to 4 pounds on this thing. So you can get them now with the AccuTrigger, but if you've got a standard one, just by replacing that trigger return spring, you can really, I think the last time I measured it, it was just a hair over 4 pounds. Now,
well, I just want to jump in here for a sec. I, because you had mentioned about being on a, I just did a quick little Google search, and Cabela's Canada has got them on, selling them for $359 with free shipping.
Excellent, excellent.
So you're looking at, you know, a sub-$400 gun.
Now that's not with the AccuTrigger, that's just with the standard trigger, right?
Yeah, it's Savage Axis, P bolt action rifle with scope.
I think the AccuTrigger add-on's an extra $50 or $75.
Yeah, and like I said, this is just Cabela's, so I'm sure if you were to check out some of the other online shops, you'd probably probably, you might even be able to find it cheaper than that. Like, this was just the first one that popped up. So $360, and I don't think I've ever heard anyone say anything bad about this rifle.
Well, Trevor was actually mentioning on the last show, I forget who was it, somebody lent out his access for somebody to use at the shoot, and didn't the guy actually win the shoot with his rifle? Like, they're tack drivers. They're, for the money, you can't. My only complaint about them is the magazines are crap. They're really flimsy magazines, but and the scopes aren't really good. But, you know, if a new scope's not in the budget right now, let's try to make the scope that came with the rifle work for you a little bit better then, because a lot of times people buy it because they can't afford the extra scope. You know, and you know, being a new shooter, if you just get your license and, you know, dumping $400 on a rifle and then dropping another $300-$400 in a scope may be outside your budget. So let's just work with what you have. If you install a scope properly, we can help you out a little bit there. They say these combo packages come bore-sided. No, this thing was not bore-sided, and all the screws were loose as well. So you're going to need a few things to get set up properly. You're going to need some blue Loctite, not some red Loctite, two small levels that you can get from the dollar store. And if you don't have any Loctite, then a pinch of nail polish can work too instead of Loctite. But just remember, don't put the red stuff on, because you'll be using a blowtorch to heat up those screws and take them off. And the only other thing I would suggest is get rid of that. It comes with those two little, it's drilled and tapped for Weaver bases. I don't remember if this came with the actual two little one-piece, one-inch Weaver bases. One at the back of the receiver, one at the front of the receiver. The only problem with that is that it limits to where your scope can be mounted. You can only put it in the center of the action. You've got nowhere to play with your eye relief. Millet makes a one-piece scope rail. I think I paid $20 for it, and it allows you to move the scope up or down 6 inches. So if you get the rifle, get the one-piece Millet scope base. That's going to be your best investment. And you only have to spend another $20 instead of getting another scope. So let me just put the rifle down here because I'm holding it in my hands. Now, the first thing you want to do is remove the scope rings and all the mounting screws, and thoroughly clean out the screw holes with a Q-tip, and clean the screws as well. You want to get those things nice and clean, and apply a small amount of Loctite to all the screw threads. Loosely reassemble the rings in the scope, just enough to keep it from moving around too much in the rifle. Now, the first thing we want to do is establish proper eye relief on your rifle. So it's comfortable to shoot, and you get a full sight picture when you pull it up, which is why I suggested the one-piece mounting rail, because that allow you to give a lot more movement to the rifle once you establish what the proper eye relief is. Now, what eye relief is, for anybody who's not sure what it is the comfortable distance that the scope can be held from the eye, and it'll still allow the shooter to see the entire image. It is literally the distance of your shooting eye to the eyepiece. It's usually stated as a range on the manufacturer's spec sheet. It may say eye relief 2 to 4 inches. And so a variable power scope rating will have a wider, a fixed scope will, depending on the power magnification of the scope, your eye relief could be 2 to 3 inches or 3 to 4 inches. It all depends on the scope. Now, on a rifle, the more generous eye relief is better. This will allow you to acquire the target more quickly, which is a must for running shots. 3 to 4 inches of eye relief is a good number that will fit most hunters. On a large Magnum rifle, you want a maximum eye relief. You don't want to have to get your face really, really close, because if that thing recoils, the scope's going to come back and hit you right in the face. And I know a lot of old-timers that have these really nice crescent scars right over their eyebrow from having their face too close to the scope and recoiling it.
We mounted a scope on... My dad was just hell-bent and determined to put a scope on his SKS, and I'm like, if they wanted a scope on these rifles, they would have designed one to go on these rifles. Anyways, long story short, he went and bought the SKS scope kit thing for it, and so we're setting it up, and that's all that went through my mind was all the stupid YouTube videos of people getting the scope right into their eyeball, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to shoot this thing. This thing's gonna fuck. Oops, I'm
did
smart.
He get it?
Yeah, he got it. And
did he get injured?
No. Well, I was the first one to shoot it when we set it up and everything. I just had visions of this thing coming back into my face. It never did. Neither one of us got that crescent shaped cut, but yeah, it's.
Well, personally, what I did, I took that combo scope off and I put it on my 22. It's on my Remington 597. And I got a Nikon, I believe it's a Pro Staff, mounted on it. And I think I paid $150 in the States for it. They retail for $189 up here. But when I looked at the combo scope, it had the rubber protection piece around the ocular eyepiece. So if you do get come back and hit you in the face, you know, you've got the rubber gasket to save you. But I was looking at that BSA scope that I was telling you about last episode, and it's got no such thing on it. It's just solid, sharp metal all around the edges. So if this thing recoils, just comes back and hits you in the face, it's going to rip your eyeball. It's going to put a nice cut in your forehead, and it's sharp. It's really, really sharp. So with the Magnum rifles, you want the maximum eye relief because it's something that just comes back and hits you in the face. And we actually have 3 or 4 old-timers at Union. They all have that little crescent right scar right above it. Because, you know, back when they did, these guys are in their 60s and 70s. They didn't have little rubber pieces on the eyepieces. So there's quite a few guys that look at the old-timers, you see a little semicircle around their eye, you know exactly how they got it. Okay, now, what you want to do with your scope at the highest magnification setting, you place your cheek. So with the height, you want to be able to, when you shoulder it, and it's on the highest magnification setting, and you're not stretching, as soon as you shoulder it, you want to be able to get the full sight picture, where it's the most comfortable without straining your neck or maneuvering the scope until you see a full picture. Don't worry, because if you increase or decrease to the lower power setting, you'll get that extra eye relief. But you want to set it up where it's a full eye relief as soon as you shoulder it, so you're not sitting there craning back and forth, so you have the same mount every single time. What you want to do is you want to get the rifle and the scope to be level, so your reticle is not canted to the left or the right. So you'll need some type of rest to keep the rifle stable and level. I have an MTM cleaning center, and that works really good. It's got 2 rubberized forks, so you can just pop the rifle in it. If you don't have that, a bipod. But what you want to do is keep that level, rifle level. So what you want to do is place, with the 2 levels that you're going to pick up, you want to place 1 level on the rifle receiver and another on the scope's tightly closed turret covers. If you have 2 levels, you can line them up. If not, if you just got 1, you can line up 1. And once it's level, pick it up, put it on top of the scope. But just, you want to make sure that the 2 of them are level. And then when you have both the rifle and scope level, then tighten down the mounting screws. Now, there are scope mounting kits available online, and to line up your scope and rings more precisely. If you can afford one of these kits, great. But if not, my suggestion will get your scope mounted properly, level, and comfortable to shoot. Also, bore sighter is a great tool to get your shots on paper before you get to the range. If you don't have a bore sighter, you can remove the bolt and look down the barrel to see if the bore and the scope are somewhat aligned on your target. Or even a laser pointer from the dollar store. If you put it in the action and you can get it to go straight down the barrel, that will help you line up your point of sight with the scope. So to recap, you want to have the proper eye relief, you want the scope and rifle to be level, and you want to try a variety of ammo. As I was saying, mentioned before, the first ammo I bought, the rifle shot like crap. The second ammo I bought, it shot really good. Now, just a quick point about ammo when you're sighting your gun or hunting or to compete. If you don't roll your own, make sure
that when you say you don't roll your own, how about we explain what that means? That term.
I'm not talking about drugs. I'm talking about reloaded ammunition. It's right. We also use it to
just kind of slang for
reloads.
Your
roll
own.
Your own. Yeah, it's like cigarettes. You make your own. It's instead of factory, it's roll your own. Don't ask where I got it from, but I like it. You don't roll your own. You want to make sure that the ammo you're using all has the same lot number on the packaging. The inside flap or the outside of the box will have manufacturer's lot number marked on it. Variations in manufacturing process can change from lot to lot, so this can affect your point of impact on range. So buy a few boxes of the same lot for sighting in, hunting, or competing to ensure you have more consistent point of aim. I do this because the Canadian Tire near me, and I hate it, they'll get bricks in, and the young kids will start taking all the boxes out of the bricks. So you can have 4 or 5 lot numbers mixed up with your 20, and I found with the 22s especially, there could be variation. And I'll make the kid pull out every single box, and I'll sit and I'll sort every single box till I get the brick that came from that lot number. I drive the kids crazy, but I tell them, don't open them all up, because, well, we have all this space. I said, yeah, but you make it harder for me.
I gotta say, when I take my scope on and off, that's all I do. I don't go through any of this process. There's got the two screws. I pop those off, pull it off, do what I need to do if I'm cleaning the rifle, back on, and it's within an inch or two anyways of being sighted in.
Okay, now when you shoulder the rifle, though, you notice that sometimes you have to turn the rifle a little bit to get the crosshairs level?
No. No, they're always level. I don't know what that means. I look through and they're there.
I was using JT lent me his 870 slug gun last year, and I pulled it up and put my cheek on it, and the scope was off just a little bit. People do that. They'll put the scope on, and it'll be off a little bit. So then they turn the rifle to accommodate the difference in the horizon on the rectangle. So that's what I'm saying. If you make sure the rifle's level, and then you level the rifle, whenever you pull it up, you can have the same sight picture. You can have the same sight lines on your rectangle all the time.
I have no idea what I've done to my scope because I've never done any of that. Like, the reticle is just a regular reticle. It's like the T-shape, right?
But when you shoulder the gun, you turn the rifle so your crosshairs are level, right?
But you turn the gun.
Okay, so you
I just shoulder it. I look through and I go bang, bang, bang.
And are the crosshairs perfect to level every time you do it, or do you have to sometimes just turn it just to get the crosshairs level?
I have no idea what you're talking about. I just shoulder it, I look through, I see the T reticle, and I put it right where I want the bullets to go, and they generally go within an inch of where I'm shooting. But it's not the scope, it's my skill. Like, if I really take my time... Well, the last time I was at the range, I had like a loony-sized grouping. Now, mind you, it's only 7 yards. My dad's pistols, so I just threw up a target board next to his. But I'm just standing, shooting offhand through my scope, and I got a loony-sized hole.
Some of the disadvantages, if your scope isn't level with your rifle, and you turn, and you automatically do it, people always do it, you'll turn the rifle just a little bit, just so it's level. And when you're done, you're not realizing, you're actually turning the recoil pad a little bit too. So instead of having it sitting right flush in your shoulder, now you have the recoil pad off a little bit center. So it could be hitting the bone, but you want your scope and your rifle to be the same level. Sometimes people just put it on, they'll line it up. It looks good to me, but when they go to pick it up, the crosshairs are a little bit crooked. So you just turn the rifle to compensate it, which you don't want to do. If you level both the rifle and the scope, whenever you pull it up and you shoulder it properly at the proper shoulder or the proper grip, your point of impact and your sight picture is going to be the same. You're not going to have your crosshairs being left or right. But you have been fired a lot of scope rifles, so.
I've got a Tasco that's the only scope I've ever used.
This is why George has New Shooter Canada, because he's a new shooter.
It was $80, if that. It was like $79.99, and it came with a boar snake. I was like, woo!
I got the same deal. I've got it right here. I got it for $50 with a boar snake from LeBaird. It works, but I did the same thing. When I put the rifle down, I had this originally on the 590 or the Marlin 795. It's got a flat top, so when I put it in my gun rest, I made sure the rifle was perfectly level. Then I put the scope on the rifle, and I made sure the scope was perfectly level. Then I tightened it down.
Hold on. I just got my rifle. Hold on.
Well, you're saying that.
I don't get. I'm.
You don't understand it.
You can hear me or not? Like, I'm looking through, and it's. I don't know. Everything's all like.
You must have it level, but you know, pick up somebody else's right rifle one time and just shoulder it where you're going to shoot it, and all of a sudden you go, oh boy, that crosshair is a little bit crooked, and you automatically turn the rifle to compensate.
You mean crooked, like tilted?
Yeah, the crosshair is not perfectly horizontal.
Like,
if you level the rifle perfectly and you level the scope perfectly, whenever you pick it up, your crosshairs will be perfectly level. If it's not level, when you pick it up, your crosshair is going to be a little bit canted to the left or canted to the right, depending on how you do it.
I had a buddy that used to say, I can't remember exactly how the quote goes or the saying goes, but the general gist of it is, the good Lord protects women, children, and the very dumb. And I think I got some divine intervention when it comes to my scope, because I just slapped on the 22 and I don't know, it looks like everything looks okay to me.
Oh yeah, I did that. Oh, I did the exact same thing when I got my first rifle and scope. I just picked it up, put the scope, turn it a little bit. Yeah, that looks good. Got it lined up. And then somebody else goes to picture it and he goes, oh, your crosshair is a little bit crooked. And I didn't realize, but I was actually turning the rifle to compensate for it. Now you're saying with your Tasco that last time you took it to the range, you had to adjust it a little bit up and a little bit to the right. It only lost a little bit of impact.
Yeah, it was shooting low.
Now, were you using the same ammunition, or is it a different lot of ammunition?
Oh, I don't know. I don't get that fancy.
But the reason I asked,
and everyone listening is probably all the old guys listening are probably pulling their hair out, and they're like, "How do you ever hit paper?" Oh, I'm going back to my buddy saying,
if you're using the exact same ammunition that you were using last time, there should have been no change of impact. If you're using different ammunition, as I said, a lot of variations change. Manufacturing change, but different manufacturers, you can get two again identical bullets, you know, one from Winchester, you know, and one from Federal, same bullet weight and everything, and one's going to group differently than the other. So if you're using the same ammunition as the last time you went shooting, your point of impact shouldn't have changed. If it did change, then your rifle's not holding zero. See, I can take my Ruger 10-22, and I've got the same lot of I bought a couple bricks of the Federal Target stuff, and I can leave it for 6 months, and I can go down with the exact same ammunition, and I can still put 10 shots in a thumbtack bench resting that thing at 50 yards. It won't change.
Oh, yeah, no, mine didn't change. The only reason why mine changed is because I pulled the scope off when I cleaned it.
Well, why would you take the scope off when you cleaned it?
Because it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Oh. Sure.
I stripped it. That's when we were talking to Erica. I stripped it, like, right down to the nuts and bolts. And the scope was in the way, and I didn't want to get any cleaner on the glass, and that, so I took it off.
Okay. That would explain it.
That's why when you're saying all this stuff, I'm like, I totally know why my scope is off, because
you took the scope right off.
I took it right off, and I don't do nothing precision with it. There's like two screws. I unscrew it, take it off, strip it, the rifle, clean it, almost literally slap the scope back on, tighten the two screws, probably not even close to where it was when it came off, and I just go to the range and go plink, plink, plink. Oh, okay, click, click, click. Got to go up a bit, or got to go down, got to go left, go, and I just turn the turrets accordingly, and bang, I'm back on zero.
Okay, so for our new shooters here, when you clean your rifle, don't take your scope off. Leave it on. If you're worried about getting solvent on the glass, either get lens covers, or what I do, because I don't have covers for one of my scopes, I put some plastic wrap and elastic bands on it.
But oh, yeah, it came with covers, which are, I think, in the bottom of my ammo can, which is in my trunk.
Well, see, if you put the covers on, I would strongly suggest not taking the optics off just to clean it. If you're going to change optics, different story. But once they're on and you've got them secured, leave it on for life, unless you're going to actually change it. Because it's going to change your point of impact.
Oh, absolutely. And mine, I haven't zeroed it back in, but it was, like I said, you know what's funny? I shot the Rifleman's Challenge with my scope off. It's about 2 inches off. It's shooting low by 2 inches. So when I shot the Rifleman's Challenge, the snowman, the one button that's like way over, that was supposed to be, I think, the beginning of his mouth. And when I shot, it was like 2-3 inches low. And I was like, well, that's not good. And I'm like, yeah, I can't be bothered to sight it in. So I just shot like 3 inches high for the rest of the snowman. I'm like, yeah, that works.
Okay, so what I just said, do it, George. Take your scope off, clean off all those screw holes, the screws, put it back on with Loctite, and leave it on.
It works.
Yeah, but say you go hunting. If you do that again, you take the scope off.
I'm not going to take my .22 hunting.
Oh, I love hunting with my .22. My .10-22. What we do is, and that's actually what I'm going to bring to Appleseed. I put a Shooter's Ridge, 0.920 bull barrel. It's fluted. I can keep that thing inside a dime at 100 yards. It's so accurate. So my buddy John and I, we have these little tiny spinners. We put them in the bunkers at the club. And we rest. We use bipods and stuff, eh? And we have a little shooting tree that we use. And it's just, I just love being able to hit precision and targets with that thing. I just wish it had been warmer out today because I really wanted to sight in that 22 Magnum still. I still haven't sighted it in.
Yeah, if I were to take it out squirrel hunting, actually, I want to go squirrel hunting this year. Oh. I'm sitting at archery. I'm kind of diverting here, a little squirrel moment here. I'm sitting at archery, and the guy blows the whistle for the all clear to go retrieve our arrows. And so we're walking up, and my middle daughter, Eva, turns and looks at me as we're walking and goes, "I think I'd like to go hunting with you and Grandpa."
Excellent.
I'm like, I could hug you right here, but not with guns. With bows and arrows. I'm like, fair enough. Like, I'm not going to hurt you.
I will take you hunting
if we're going to be hunting with just knives. I don't care. She is 13.
Oh, so she can get her hunter's license, her miner's permit. I think they lowered the age to 12 for your hunting license.
Did they?
Yeah, it used to be 15. I think they lowered it to 12. It's like an apprentice license or something. But yeah, check the ministry because go for it.
So yeah, so I was quite pleased and quite happy with that. I thought that was pretty cool. So that was my squirrel moment. Anyways, this year hopefully Toby and Styx don't hear this part, so we'll talk real quiet.
I hear red squirrels really tasty, but we can't shoot them.
I want to try and do some squirrel hunting.
I know a place where you can go.
Well, there's
a friend of mine is having squirrel problems up at his resort. He'd be more than happy to let us come in with our shotguns and do a little squirrel removal.
You don't hunt with shotguns with squirrel, do you? There wouldn't be anything left.
Well, you're not planning on eating them, are you?
Sure. You're not going to just go kill squirrels for the hell of killing squirrels.
Well, for a nuisance, I'd just get rid of them.
Maybe if it was a nuisance. No, I want to go hunt them and, like, kill them and eat them.
Oh, you know, he did, my friend Terry, he had, he's having a problem with raccoons really destroying his property. And he had a single shot, 410. And he goes to take a shot at that raccoon. And where the cottages are, the road is all rock face. It's all granite. And at the last second, the raccoon moved. And when he shot the 410, it ricocheted off the rock and went right through one of his cottages.
There was just in the news, London's had a bit of a coyote problem lately, so much so there was a coyote in my parents' neighborhood, and about a block away, they tracked it down and shot it. The cops shot it down. Popped a cap in it.
They're a big nuisance out here.
I was like, wow.
They really are. Whenever the train goes through, there's train tracks maybe a half kilometer south of me, you can just hear them yelping.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're really bad.
You know what's funny? We have a bog, not really the center of town, but part of London. And the immediate area neighbors were always complaining because it was full of deer, and the deer were getting into the backyards and causing all sorts of damage. And so the immediate neighbors wanted a deer call done. And, of course, then you get all the tree huggers going, "Oh, no, you can't shoot Bambi. Oh, poor Bambi." So nature has a way of correcting itself. Now the coyotes have moved in. So the deer population has gone down. Now these people are like, there was a story, oh my goodness, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago now, where this woman's walking her dog and a coyote pops out and attacks the dog and runs off with the dog. I shouldn't be laughing. That's a horrible thing. But I'm like, I felt so bad for these people. I'm like, first they got the deer, now they got the coyotes. So now the coyotes, there's patches of all over London that have coyotes in them.
They put a bounty back on them because we had a lady, 3 years ago, just north of me, it's just country roads, and she was walking her little poodle, Fifi. I don't know what her actual name was. I hate poodles, but she's walking her little white poodle on the leash. Da-da-da, coyote comes out of nowhere, takes the poodle and the leash, gone, right out of her hand.
Yeah, that's happened here in London. I haven't heard of it happening in quite a while, but that's happened here. I was... I'm going to let my geek out a little bit. As geocaching in London, and as behind this industrial complex, like
what's geocaching?
It's kind of like orienteering, but with GPS. And people hide like a Tupperware container, upload the coordinates to a website, and then you know you download them to your GPS, then you go find it, and you know it's pretty cool.
Well, it's cheating if you're using a GPS.
No, that's the whole point of the game. It's orienteering is with a compass and a map. This is for the technologically geeky advanced types.
Oh, okay.
Although personally, I think a map and compass would be much more difficult, which would be advanced. But anyways, neither here nor there. Hey, so I was talking to this guy. It was in the middle of wintertime. I was chatting with this guy, plow operator. And we were kind of heading to this wooded area, and the guy's like, ooh, you might want to stay out of there. And I'm like, well, the boogeyman going to come and get me? And the guy kind of looked at me as if I was an idiot, because I kind of was. And so he's like, no, he goes, there's coyotes in there. He goes, and they're not afraid, and they're mean. He goes, I was plowing the other night, got out of the tractor to take a leak. Just came right up at me, growling and the whole bit, and it was kind of scared me and got back in the tractor. And I was like, yeah, and I got my little kids. Well, my kids were little at the time. And I was like, yeah, we'll find that one in the spring.
Yeah, yeah. And one of our, I was working on one of the buses, and the driver lives near a golf course up north of Markham, and he's got a big golden retriever. And his property backs right on the golf course, and they're walking the dog. They had a pack of 6 of them come after him and the dog. So they jumped on top of a bulldozer because they wanted the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so he calls 911 on his cell phone. And, of course, you know, telling him what's happening. Of course, his cell phone dies halfway through the call. And 2 or 3 minutes later, he hears all the sirens, and they sent everybody. And the fire truck came right up, right on the green, came right through the field. And he said those coyotes didn't take off until the fire truck was about 20 yards away from him.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted his golden retriever.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd be too afraid if it was one single coyote. But you start getting into a pack. I remember watching like nature shows. Now, these wolves, not coyotes, but I imagine coyotes would be doing the same thing. But the way they hunt, like, watching a wolf pack take down a moose.
That's
like
amazing.
A big, giant moose. And they just nip and nip and nip at the back tendons on the legs until the moose, they snap the tendons. But I wouldn't want to mess with a pack. One-on-one, I don't know.
I was watching
how scary if one coyote would be. But
a wolf pack out in the up in the Northwest Territories, and how they go after the caribou. And they're really smart. They set up sentries, so they'll have... Along the route, they'll have 4 or 5 wolves standing in wait.
Mm-hmm.
And the one wolf will start chasing after them, and he'll start running. And when he tires, the other wolf comes out, and they'll go through 4 or 5 wolves before they finally thin one of the old ones or the real young ones out. And they work it as a team effort. It's amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, and then once they find the one that they're going to go after, and then they start going after the back legs. Until they get they snap the tendons, and then the back of the animal just falls, and then they move in. But it's pretty wild. It's quite wild. I'm wolves, coyotes, right? They're basically kind of same animal. So I would assume coyotes would do the same thing. I have no idea. I'm just guessing.
So. Well, coyotes aren't normally a pack animal, but the last few years they have been around here. You'll like they don't usually hunt. I'm sorry, wolves aren't usually a pack animal down here. You'll see them tend to be solitary, but even down here now, I've seen a wolf in North Whitby. I was quite surprised.
I was driving down the 401. This is going back a number of years now. It was New Year's Eve. I was heading to Chatham for a New Year's party, and it was dark, and you know, when you're driving down the highway, your lights catch something on the side of the road, it's for such a fraction of a second. But it was definitely a dog, and it had long, long legs. So I don't think it was a coyote. I'm pretty sure it was a wolf. And this was southwest of London.
I was driving to work a couple of years ago, and I was working right down, right at Lake Ontario, right at the Don Valley Parkway, and just south of Lakeshore. And I've got somebody driving in front of me, one of our drivers, our bus driver, this was in front of me, and we take the corner to go on to Commissioner Street, and I see this coyote jump in front of his car, he slams on the brakes, but I'm far enough behind him that, you know, I was able to stop in time. And we get to the vigil, he goes, "Wow, did you see that German Shepherd?" I said, "What German Shepherd?" He goes, "Oh, that jump in front of me." "That wasn't a German Shepherd, that was a coyote." And it was a big, well-fed coyote. You see them running across, I've seen them run across the road down at Bayview Avenue. We've got the same ravine come through there. Anywhere there's green space, they've come down.
Well, I'm in this part of Ontario, and I think, I'm pretty sure you're part of Ontario too. It's open season all year round for wolves and coyotes.
Coyotes, yes. Down here, wolves, there is a fur-bearing tag that you need for wolves, but I'm not sure if it's this far south. I know, like, around Huntsville area, you need a tag. But down here, it's open season on coyotes most of the time. They were talking
Unless it changed this year. I didn't get the regs book this year. But I know in previous years, I'm pretty sure wolves, it was wolves and coyotes. This far south, I'm pretty sure wolves were included. When you start getting north, and I don't know where it is, there's a certain line once you hit a certain Wildlife Management Unit, MWMU, or whatever the freaking thing is called.
The ministry was talking about putting bounty back on the coyotes, which would be a great thing.
But, you know, I've also, I heard somebody saying, I don't know if it was on a podcast, or maybe it was just chat around the gun club, that they got away from doing bounties because they found that it wasn't really doing anything anyways. Like, they weren't getting the number of kills that they thought they would by putting bounties on.
It's funny, the East Hill Outdoors that I was telling you about that opened up near me, when I went in there, they have a contest. And you get one contest entry for every coyote that you kill.
That'd be cool.
You have to take they don't want the coyote. They just want proof that you killed a coyote. And I forget what the prize is, but cause I just looked at it briefly, right? That was kind of funny. But for every coyote you kill, you get an entry into this draw.
What would you do with the coyote once you killed it?
It depends on... The problem is, you don't really have a trapper's license. So if I got some pelts, I have a friend of mine that actually has his trapper license. And as long as it's not really bad with mange, the pelt's in good shape, I would give it to Gord. And he could process the pelt and sell it. Because there is a market for coyote pelts.
But, like, some schmo like me in London, I don't know anybody like that. What do they do?
Well, see, it's because it's not suitable for food, you can let it rot. But, you know, like any other animal that's suitable for consumption, you can't let the meat be destroyed. You have to use the meat. But
yeah.
Coyotes are considered nuisance, and, you know, you just let it rot. But if I got a couple nice... nice-looking coyotes. The one that I shot, I've just left. But I have got some near Brighton.
Would you fed a coyote to your dog? Would your dog get, like, mad dog disease?
I'm not sure.
Can you feed the dog to a dog?
I wouldn't. I guess any type of communicable diseases that can go between that breed could be passed to your dog.
Yeah, no, but if you cooked it up, barbecue up a coyote, next to your steak.
Well, I guess
make sure you don't get them mixed up.
I guess some cultures might eat them. I don't know anybody that
well, I wouldn't eat the coyote. I'd feed it to my dog.
I don't know. My dog's pretty fussy. He's a steak guy.
Your dog's a woman.
Hey, this guy, JT, when he goes hunting, he always puts a couple of deer legs aside for cold. and he eats, like, we're talking a full-length shin bone. You put Colt down with that bone, he eats the entire bone. It's, give him 2 hours, the whole thing's gone.
No way.
Oh, it's just, you can feed a dog raw bone. You can't feed a dog cooked bone because the bone dries out and it's brittle and it can puncture their intestines. But the raw bone, they can digest. And he loves it. Like, yeah. Amy's his favorite person.
I've heard that before. I feed my dog cooked bones. Like, if I have a steak or
chops. No, never. Never feed them cooked bones. It's very, very dangerous. I know a couple of dogs that actually had their intestines punctured from them. Chickens are the worst because it's such a small, sharp bone.
Yeah, I know, not chickens, but I've always
butchered down here last year, had some elk bones. Really nice bones, and I got them fresh off the butcher. I don't know where he got he butchered it for somebody or where he got the elk from, but he was selling them in the store. And so I brought the bone home, and I started cutting off some of the meat. The fair giving the meat separately. It actually smelled good raw. But Coat, I mean, we're talking about a huge knuckle, a huge thing. He ate that in an afternoon, just gone.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't have to feed him that day. Well, only good thing he pooped up in the field up here, because it would have made quite a mess in the backyard.
It just still comes out like a white powder.
So another squirrel moment by New Shooters Canada about coyotes and what to feed your dog.
Yes, and you know what? We're gonna have to keep this one short tonight because we're recording on a Monday night, and I gotta get to bed. So
you promised your favorite listener you put up an episode tonight too. I got a message about that.
Yeah, I think we've kept it pretty clean, so I got no editing. All I gotta do is just stick the music in and post it up. So
You got two iTunes reviews.
Yes, so let's wrap this up with our iTunes reviews. So I will do the first one, and you do the second one, right?
Okay.
Okay, the first one is from CornFed 1100. The reason why I wanted to...
It's on the American feed, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure both these got to be on the American feed. CornFed 1100 says, these guys deliver useful, realistic information for us average shooters. They deliver the information in a fun, simple manner, because I'm a very simple-minded person. That was my addition. Give them a listen. They won't talk over your head. Great show, guys.
Excellent. Thank you, CornFed.
And I believe that's Red from Facebook.
Oh, is it?
That's the rumor.
I don't see any stars listening. The next one actually says he gave us 5 stars. This is also on the American feed. And it says, great podcast, attention beggars, brackets, 5 stars, by Crosnet, January 26, 2015. I wonder who this is. Well, since you two are whining about not having any comments on iTunes, I'm giving you 5 stars. I look forward to wiping the floor with you two in the Appleseed March in March, since they may have to instruct you if they run short. Also, he might not be an instructor. Otherwise, I plan on shooting with the American team, F-A. Can I say that? F-A?
Yeah.
F-yeah. Okay, F-yeah. Great job, guys. Keep it up and keep it Canadian. Tim from the Lone Star State. Thank you, Tim, I think.
But doesn't get much more Canadian than talking about the 401 and Don Valley Parkway. So, check and check. I don't know. Have we set a boot yet this episode?
We never say boot.
Or what about A? Have we said A yet?
No, I don't think so.
Maple syrup? Beaver?
I was thinking
moose.
About beaver.
Oh, we did. We talked about moose.
Yeah, we talked about moose. Yeah, that's true. We talked about squirrels. So I think we're being influenced by Toby and Sticks.
Yeah. Well, we could talk about white squirrels out in Exeter.
Oh, and did you get that audio clip from Sticks from Assad?
You know what? I did not. I don't think so. He sent me some...
Oh, we don't want to put those audio clips on.
Sent me some other audio. That does not exist. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Well, maybe we should include those at the closing comments as well. So maybe the intro, because that's a really good plug for Appleseed from the side.
I thought he did send it. Just checking my phone right now.
He didn't send it to me. I don't have anything. But when he sends it, Masada gave me a really good little promo for the Appleseed shoot. So.
Oh, he did too.
And I think he's also, I think Matthew mentioned that they're going to plug it occasionally too. So it's great. You know, the more Canadians we can get interested in attending some of these Appleseed shoots. They did mention too that at one point there was supposed to be a maple seed. I don't know whether that ever came bear fruit.
I think that was on the forum, the Appleseed forum, appleseedinfo.org. There was a maple seed section on the forum.
But it was blank. There was nothing in there from what I hear.
You know what? I was going to go check it the other day, and I never did. Okay, well, I just uploaded it to my Google Drive, but it's not here.
Well, that's something we can probably see. We can find out for next show to see if there's a Canadian history marksmanship clinic that we could recommend. So any closing comments or shout-outs?
No shout-outs, not that I can think of, because I've got my nose buried deep into my phone trying to find that Masada Ayoub ad for the thing. I just uploaded it.
I guess the only shout-outs... The only shout I have is David Copian from Grand Power. He sent me a photo of the rear sight on the Excalibur that we can include in our show notes, and he was very instrumental in getting me the Excalibur, so thank you, David. It's greatly appreciated. And I can't think of anything else right now. I think that's just about it. Oh, I forgot. I got my package from Styx today.
Oh, yes.
I got an Appleseed shirt. And I have some of the Appleseed targets that we can use. We can practice before we actually go down there. So when you come up, we can go up to the range and use these targets he sent me. And I got this really cool paracord bracelet that he made me. So thank you, Styx. It's greatly appreciated. And luckily, I didn't get it in pink like Stacy's, apparently. So that's good. And actually, the paracord bracelet matches the shirt. But it's the same color as the Appleseed shirt. So thanks again.
Oh, you know what? Sorry, I do have a shout-out. And I might get smacked if I didn't say this. Actually, I probably wouldn't. But shout out to Stacy, because she's actually pulling and checking our American feed iTunes, because I haven't taken the time to actually have her show me how to do that. So until she shows me how to do it, she's kind of on the hook for doing it. And she's been doing it. So a shout out to Stacy. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Stacy.
And I think that's going to do it.
Okay.
I think we're, check my phone, I think we're around the hour mark, so that's not too bad.
Beautiful. Thanks for listening. We appreciate you coming back and putting up with this for another hour.
And till next time, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
And take your kids shooting. Good night, everybody.
Cheers.
I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small.
Thank you for taking the time and listening to our show. Our audience is important to us, and we encourage our listeners to contact the show with feedback, suggestions, or questions that you may have. You can contact the guys at hosts@newshootercanada.ca. And please like our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and have a groovy day.
God made the animals, and God made the trees. God made you, well, hell, he even made me. And he gave me this voice, so I could be a singer. So you tell me why I've got a trigger finger. I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale, well, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.